is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. We've had their partnership manager and training specialist, Jefferson Mason, and marketing manager, Nick Bartlett, on the show in the past, and we couldn't be more excited about what they're doing for the game of basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Beyond efficient reps, Dr. Dish provides training expertise and versatility designed to develop complete players. The new Dr. Dish CT machine has further revolutionized basketball training with over 150 plus on-demand individual and team workouts from some of the best coaches and trainers in the game. These workouts include video instruction and combine game-like shooting drills with ball handling, conditioning, and agility drills. Along with workouts, the Dr. Dish training management system also provides stat tracking and analytics to track progress and ensure accountability. These are just a few reasons why top programs like Duke, North Carolina, Louisville, Florida, Baylor, and countless others are upgrading to Dr. Dish. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com. Follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And make sure you mention the Hoopheads podcast to get $300 off your next Dr. Dish purchase. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get out and get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
When you don't think you have all the answers, when your ego's not involved in the decision, then all of a sudden you're going to make really good decisions and you're going to grow. But when you think you don't need, you can learn from somebody, or your ego is jealous of someone else's success and you don't think they know what they're doing, then I think you're going to stop growing. And you've got to be able to develop yourself every single day as a coach, because the players only respect knowledge. And if you're not working on your knowledge to improve it every day, you lose the respect of the players.
Michael Lombardi is an NFL insider for The Athletic. Lombardi is a former 30-year NFL front office executive, having worked for two Hall of Famers in Bill Walsh and Al Davis, and one soon to be enshrined, Bill Belichick. Michael has served various roles in the front office and coaching staff, from area scout to pro personnel director to assistant to the head coach, and finally to GM of the Cleveland Browns. From 2014 to 2016, he was an assistant to the coaching staff of the Patriots. He's also worked for numerous media outlets, including Sports Illustrated and The Ringer. Michael and Coach George Raveling have created The Daily Coach, which aims to be an inspiration to coaches and provide a daily hands-on approach to becoming a better leader. His book, Gridiron Genius, details the insights he has gathered during his time in the NFL with some of the greatest coaches in the history of the game. After you finish listening to this episode, please leave us a 5-star rating and review on your favorite podcast app. Those ratings help others in the basketball community to find our show. If you love what you're hearing, please tell a friend or coaching colleague to give us a listen. And make sure you subscribe to the Hoopheads podcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play, or YouTube so you never miss an episode. You can also visit our website at hoopheadspod.com to hear every episode we've ever recorded. I hope you have your notebook in hand as you listen to this episode of the Hoopheads podcast with former NFL executive Mike Lombardi from The Athletic. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here this morning without my co-host Jason Sunkel, but I am pleased to welcome former NFL general manager, author of The Daily Coach and the book The Gridiron Genius, Michael Lombardi. Michael, it is a pleasure to have you on the podcast.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here. I appreciate it. You know, I have a great affection for basketball, and I love coaches, so this is awesome for me.
What's going on with your Philadelphia 76ers?
A little disappointing. I think that, you know, they can't shoot. I mean, let's just be real honest. It's hard to win when you have open shots and you can't knock them down. And, you know, it's frustrating, and they've been in a lot of these games, and they just can't, you know, when you shoot as poorly as you shoot from the three-point line in a three-point game, you know, you're not going to win those. So, you know, they're going to have to figure it out. I think that, you know, the people that they're paying to be great shooters are not shooting well, and I don't think this is just a slump. I think this has been the case for most of the season.
I would agree. What's your long-term prognosis on Embiid and Simmons together? Does it eventually work, or do they have to split them up, you think, to get where they want to go?
What
do you
think? I mean, I'm a huge Simmons fan. I think too much is made of him not shooting the ball from the three-point line. I think he should, but I think he's an incredible defender. I think he's an unbelievable court in the open court. I went to one of the practices, Mike. I've never seen anybody that fast with the ball in his hand. You know, for me, Embiid's probably the most frustrating player that I've ever watched in my whole career because he has dominant traits, but they tease you. You know, he's not in great shape. He doesn't get up and down the court. He doesn't have the ability to really take over games unless he wants to. And, you know, when Clint Capella scores 30 on you, you're wondering what the hell's going on. And he's got every excuse known to mankind. I mean, my whole sense of it is look, if it meant that much to you after the Toronto game that you're on TV crying with your girlfriend, then get in shape, change your body, do things that you have to do to help yourself win. You know, the four-game winning streak, all that, I hate losing. Well, you know, you turn the ball over 3 times in the fourth quarter against Miami. So, like, if you hate losing, don't turn the ball over, right?
I hear you. 100%.
You know, to me, what I don't like is he doesn't accept any accountability, and he doesn't do anything to change it. You know, he doesn't do anything to change it. He's got a rep that he's great, but if Moses Malone were watching him play, Moses would just shake his head.
I agree. I think, I don't know, what comes to me is I went back and looked at his rookie basketball card and his body and what his body looked like then compared to what his body looked like now. And I think that conditioning piece of it is such a huge part of why he struggles to be at his best all the time. He just can't bring it 100% of the time. And that makes it, man, that makes it super challenging. And that'll actually lead into something that you've talked about before and that you've written about, and that's competitive stamina. And it seems like that may be something that he lacks. So let's use that as a great segue to jump into what competitive stamina means and how that can impact us as coaches.
Well, I think it starts with mental toughness, which is what I don't think Embiid has. I don't think Embiid has incredible. I don't think he has the mental toughness. I think when games are on the line, the teams that win are the teams that have the most mental toughness, which is being willing to do what's right for the team when it might not be right for you. You know, and so competitive stamina is the ability to never be satisfied and the ability to always start the season over, to never look at what you've achieved in the past and really see yourself as never having achieved anything at all. David Crosby said this on a documentary that I heard, and it was really compelling to me. He said, when you're a first-time artist, and he was talking about the days in the 70s in Echo Park where all these musical people were convened and they were all writing songs and they were all, you know, getting record deals. And he said this, he said, you know, when you put out your first album, those 12 songs are basically 15 years of your life. Your next album is whether you find out whether you have talent or not. And that's competitive stamina. The ability to have the next album make it as good as the first, you know, and some people just don't have that. They don't have that drive that once they climb the mountain, they think they belong at the top of the mountain. When guys like Belichick and Brady, they have no problem going back to base camp and they start to climb over because they're not in love with the result. They're in love with the process. And that's what drives them.
How do you fight that as a coach in your athletes or as a coach in yourself? Is there anything that you can do to improve that in a player, or is there anything that you can do from a coaching standpoint to guard against that falling off? Or do you think that's something that's more innate in certain people?
Well, I think you definitely have to work on it. I think you got to take ego out of the decision. I wrote this for the Daily Coach yesterday about Coach O, about winning the national championship. Like at some point, your ego is always going to get in the way of any success you can have. And if you don't guard against your ego, if you don't remove your ego from everything and strip it down and basically humble yourself every single day, then you're probably not going to be able to be competitively stamina. If you think you're God's gift, if you think that you're the only way you can do it is your way, you know, then I think it becomes, you're going to lose that edge that you once had. I mean, think about it. When we're young and first starting in the coaching profession, we're eager to learn everything. And then 10 years into it, we think we know everything. And if we keep that, if we would ever keep that childlike appetite in terms of our growth mindset and keeping our ego out of it, you know, then I think we can, then we develop competitive stamina. And look, we all have egos, right? We all have it. My first job in college football in 1981, a guy, Bob Owens, who's passed away, said to me, Michael, the greatest challenge in this sport is your own ego. The ego is the cancer of the coaching profession. And it's true. It's true. And that was before Instagram, and that was before Facebook, and before Twitter, where there was glorification within instance. And so you've got to really dedicate yourself to being able to humble yourself every single day.
Well, you've talked about, I know, how Coach Belichick doesn't pay attention to anything outside of, quote, the room. Anything that is going on that could potentially distract him from his core beliefs and the things that he knows and understand need to happen in order for his team to be successful, he just ignores all those things. And yet we know that because of today's media environment and the internet and just all of that stuff that goes into it, it's very, very difficult for coaches, players, I'm sure front office people to not pay attention to it because there's just so much out there. So how do you go about, again, as a coach or an executive or even a player, how do you go about focusing and what do you recommend for people to stay away from that and keep their focus on what they truly believe?
You know, that's a challenge. I think you have to have core principles of who you are, right? And, you know, you always go back. I tell the story of Robert Caro, who's written, you know, he's written 5 books on Lyndon Johnson. And he wrote 1 book on Robert Moses. And every morning when he walks into his office in downtown Manhattan, in Midtown Manhattan, he looks at a piece of paper that has a paragraph on it. And that paragraph tells him what he's writing this book about, the essence of the book. And I think we should always have a piece of paper that we carry around that really defines who we are as the core, what we are as a coach. This is who we are. And we need to read that every day. And if we think we're getting away from it, we need to circle back. Because that's the only way we can stay grounded and rooted in our own core philosophy.
I want to go to something that you wrote about in the book, and obviously you've been able to be around some of the best minds ever in coaching, specifically obviously within the NFL. And can you talk a little bit about your time when you were driving Bill Walsh around in his Porsche and just what a great opportunity to become educated about what it takes to be successful? Just give us that backstory quickly.
You know, I was fortunate. I mean, I got hired as a gopher, made really no money. And Bill had this great Porsche, and he always, this is, you know, 1984, right? So there's no cell phone, there's no Uber, you know. And so if he needed a ride to the airport, you know, my fat ass was driving him to the airport. If he needed something done, I was driving him. I mean, I was basically, and, you know, I got to be in the car with him. And over time, you know, I got to listen to him kind of talk about the things he wanted to talk about, because it was kind of like his way to decompress, you know? And so he would just say things. And I can remember one time driving him back, we had the combine in Phoenix, and it was outdoors, and I had to drive him back to the hotel, and he just vented about some of the assistant coaches during that time. And, you know, and I just listened and took it all in. And it was the greatest learning experience of my life, because there was no distractions, right? There was no, he was not talking on the phone. There was no satellite radio. There was just basically, you know, 2 people in a car having to have a conversation, whether he wanted to have it or not. And all I could do was just take it down. I wish, you know, fortunately, I had a really good memory, but I wish I had OneNote back then where I would have been able to just put everything, you know, car ride number 5. Here's what
exactly
Bill said.
Yeah,
you
for
know?
Sure.
But I just had pencil and paper, and I would write it down, and I lived it. I mean, I lived it, so I never forgot it. It's like things you do in your childhood that you remember because you lived it. Al Davis used to tell me all the time, he'd say, kid, you know, you can't work in the NFL. You got to live in the NFL. And I lived in that car with him because I could remember everything we talked about.
Head Start Basketball, along with members of the Jay Billis Skills Camp staff, will be hosting the very first Prime Skills Camp, an affiliate of the Jay Billis Skills Camp that is held annually in Charlotte, North Carolina. Prime Skills Camp will take place on the campus of Western Reserve Academy, just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, June 26th through the 28th, and will be designed for boys rising to grades 6 through 9. Prime Skills Camp will mirror the Jay Billis Skills Camp in daily programming, teaching, coach-to-camper ratio, and quality of instruction. Prime Skills Camp brings all of the team-oriented individual instruction, focus on the fundamentals, and high-level coaching to young men aspiring to a high school varsity basketball experience. This camp is operated by Billis Camp Veterans and includes the J. Billis Coaches Development Program alongside the camp, ensuring that the quality of teaching and coaching at this camp is second to none. Please visit headstartbasketball.com or jbilliscamp.com for more information or to get registered.
All right, so one of the things that comes through so loud and clear when you read the book is those 17 principles in Bill Walsh's standard of performance. And I want to just hit on one or two of them that really strike a chord with me and then just kind of get you to expound a little bit more about what they meant to him and how you've seen them applied throughout your career in the NFL. So one of them is be deeply committed to learning and teaching. And you talked a second ago about how important it was to have that growth mindset. So talk a little bit more about what it means to be deeply committed to learning and teaching in practice. What does that look like?
Well, I think it looks like, you know, this doesn't look like you steal everybody's ideas, but I think you're constantly thinking of ways to improve who you are as a coach. I mean, once you understand you are a teacher, which is what Walsh really believed he was. He didn't think he was a coach, he was a teacher. So he was constantly going to find ways to improve his teaching methods through visualization, through, you know, the chalkboard. You know, we didn't have grease boards back then. I mean, Bill was the first guy to start taping his presentations so that the players could go back and watch them. And, you know, it's constant. And basically, those 17 principles came from the book In Search of Excellence by Tom Peters. And because of Tom Peters, you know, that growth mindset was created. And when you don't think you have all the answers, when your ego's not involved in the decision, then all of a sudden you're going to make really good decisions and you're going to grow. But when you think you can learn from somebody, or your ego is jealous of someone else's success and you don't think they know what they're doing, then I think you're going to stop growing. And you've got to be able to develop yourself every single day as a coach, because the players only respect knowledge. And if you're not working on your knowledge to improve it every day, you lose the respect of the players.
I think that's a tremendous point. Is that something that you had right from the get-go in terms of your own career and your own mentality, your own outlook on things? How have you changed and grown in some of these areas from the time you were riding the car with Bill Walsh until where you are now? What are some of the things that you've seen other people do that maybe you wouldn't have come to naturally, but you've come to understand and be able to put into place as you've gone through your career?
Well, you know, when you start out in this business, you think cultures, you don't even know what the word culture means. You know, coaches use chemistry, and it's probably the wrong word, you know, but our chemistry in the locker room isn't good. Well, really, it's our culture. And as a young scout, you're always just looking to find the best players. And understanding team building takes time. It really takes time. How to build a team, how to create a culture, that takes time. They don't teach you that in any school. They don't teach you that when you get into the NFL. It's kind of a little bit like you're a chef and you've got to learn the recipe by watching because it's not written down. So I think that really was something, as I look back on my career, the mistakes I've made that I've learned from have been related to thinking talent cures all, and it's really culture. When Walsh told me in 84 that we're only competing against 8 teams, my sense of that was, shit, that's just the 8, you know, that's the 8 good quarterbacks that are in the league counting us, right? Right? Really, he was saying there's only 8 organizations that have great culture. But I wasn't smart enough to understand that, you know? And I think the mistake you make, and most people make this in life, and I certainly have made this. This is probably one of the things that I didn't understand was, there's two kind of jobs you have, and they really come down to this: jobs you can make a difference in, and jobs you can only grow from. And at times, I was in a job that I could only grow from, and I tried to make a difference, and I pissed people off, and that was taken as maybe being disloyal, you know, not understanding where you are. And I think that you have to really understand and appreciate when you're in a job that you can only grow from, you got to grow. you will get to a job you can make a difference in, and then you got to make a difference. But only if you grow from when the jobs you have that you grow. And you've got to really understand that. And I probably look back on my career and I wish I would have, in 84, I wish I would have learned that. Because I left Bill Walsh in 87 because I wanted to advance my career and I thought this was a better opportunity when I should have just stayed with him and grown.
So do you think that the difference between those two types of jobs is due to the circumstances surrounding it, where no matter what I do in this job, the circumstances, and define that however you want, the circumstances prevent you from being able to enact your program or do the things that you truly believe are going to be important. And so then you have to look around, as you said, for other ways to improve yourself and take it as a learning experience to take to your next job. Is that kind of what you're saying?
Yeah. And I think that, you know, now in the day and age of OneNote or Evernote or all that, that if you're in a job that you perhaps feel frustrated with because the people above you, you're not really able to grow, you can go into your and start typing how you really feel. You don't have to tell anybody, you know. This is what I would do. And those diary entries are going to benefit you when you get into a job. You know, Bob McKittrick, the old offensive line coach, I was flying back with him from the Senior Bowl. We sat next to him, and he was teaching me pass protections. And we were on the plane, and he said to me, you know, Michael, the one thing I think you can learn here more than anything is sometimes what not to do as opposed to what to do. Now, we do a lot of things really well here, but sometimes learning what not to do will benefit you more.
Yeah, I think that's totally true.
The essence. I mean, if you ever talk to a scout or a coach who doesn't admit the five mistakes he made in his career, then you're talking to somebody that has no idea what they're talking about. Like, this ain't a Hollywood movie. You know, we're not going through this thing perfectly. We're all going to screw up. We're all going to make mistakes, right? It's the ones that learn from the mistakes that end up growing better.
Yeah, and I think that goes to another one of Walsh's principles, which is take pride in your effort as an entity separate from the result of that effort. And sometimes, to your point, let's say you're a scout and you're doing your due diligence on a player, and for whatever reason, it doesn't work out. We all know scouting is a very, very inexact science. But if you went through the whole entire process and you know that you put everything into it, you have to understand that that's going to lead to more hits than misses if you trust your process and you're continuing to grow and learn from that. So talk a little bit about how important it is to disconnect the process from the result and why that's important in coaching. Because I think that's something that any coach at any level, from coaching third grade basketball up to coaching NFL players, I think that concept is key to being a good coach.
Right. So I think the number one thing in this area is, Mike, I think that you've got to be able to truly understand why you win and why you lose. I think so many coaches have no clue about this. The TV people that do the broadcast of the game have no clue about why a team's winning or why a team's losing. They don't really know. They have a narrative, right, that they just echo out. And that narrative becomes popular. You know, the Tennessee Titans won because Derrick Henry gained 200 yards. Yeah? The Titans won because Henry gained 200 yards. No, he helped them win because of the 200 yards. But the Titans won the game because when they were in the red zone, they scored three touchdowns three times. The Titans won the game because when fourth and one happened for the Ravens, a team that was 10 for 10 during the season, the Tennessee Titans stopped them on both fourth and ones, and as a result, scored 14 points off of those stops. That's why the game changed, right? That's the essence of it. So as you're sitting back and you're looking over things, the only way you can improve or the only way you can grow is to truly understand why you win and why you lose. That's it. That's the only thing you can do. And so once you do that, now you can make the decisions to what you're going to do to improve. And sometimes the scoreboard is wrong. Like, let's take Kansas City, Houston, right? Everybody's talking about poor Bill O'Brien, right? He's getting the crap beat out of him because how do you blow a 24-0 lead in the second quarter, right? Bill O'Brien should be fired, right? It's a complete joke, right? So when you're watching a football game or a basketball game, the scoreboard, as Walsh wrote about it, and the scoreboard will take care of itself, the scoreboard doesn't matter, right? What matters is who's in control, not who's in the lead. Because who's in the lead, the Sixers had a 10-point lead against the Dallas Mavericks at the first half in Dallas, and they lost the game by 20, you know? Like, were they in control of that game, or were they just in the lead? You know, were the Texans in control with 24-0, or were they just in the lead? And if you watched the game closely, you knew that the Texans were never in control of that game, that they just happened to be in the lead because Kansas City screwed some things up badly. They got a punt block. They dropped some key third downs. They didn't cover a guy wide open for a touchdown. So that's the essence of that. And so once you understand that, then you fix your process. And sometimes you lose. Sometimes you lose. And you learn this really in betting, right? Like I do a show for VSiN called The Lombardi Line where I pick games. And I've been fortunate during the season. I've been at 67%. And last week, I love Seattle, right? I analyzed the game and I thought Seattle, I thought it would be a three-point game. And the line was 4.5. Well, it came down to a two-point play that Russell Wilson didn't make, or else I would be right. But was I wrong with my analysis? No. Was the outcome not what I wanted? Yes. But that doesn't mean I was wrong with the analysis, right?
Right.
So you got to go. It's the same thing in games. You've got to go back and say, you know, here's. But you also can't be ego-driven and say, well, this is the plan and I know it's going to work. Again, you got to step back and really analyze.
Yeah, I think that another thing that goes along with this in my mind is when I read that, I took it as sometimes as a player, I can do the right thing, whatever that right thing may be. Let's take a basketball example. I may sprint the floor as hard as I can, and I may get a pass, I may go up for the shot, and I may miss it. That happens sometimes. And if my coach says to me, oh, what are you doing? How do you mess that up? Instead of saying, man, you busted your butt down the lane to get to where you're supposed to be. If you keep doing that every single time, eventually you're going to get good results. Now, you may not get good results every single time, but your process was right. And I think that's where I take it from a coaching standpoint, that when you're trying to encourage people to do things correctly, you can't look at what that outcome is. You have to look at, did we do it right? And to your point, we may not always get those exact results we want.
There's no doubt. And I think we're in a society that only does, that only looks at the result, right? Instantaneous. You know, like just go to Twitter. When the Texans were up 24-0, Twitter was already complaining about how bad the championship game was going to be between Tennessee and the Texans. Like, who would really want to watch that game? Like, this is so disappointing. Well, there's the reaction, right? You know, and it's completely wrong, you know. And then on the other side, I think you got to be really honest and say, this player may be doing it right all the time, but he ain't good enough. You know, you've got to do it both ways. It just can't be, hey, we got this, just stick-to-itiveness. It's also got to be making the right decision when something isn't good.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That goes to another one of Walsh's principles, which is seek poise in yourself and those you lead. And to me, that's something that's always been very, very important to me in my coaching when I think about how I try to present myself as a coach and how I want my players to present themselves. So just talk about what Walsh meant when he said, seek poise in yourself and those you lead.
I think, you know, I see Belichick and I see Walsh, and I think I'm watching someone playing world-class chess at the highest level. And anytime you watch a chess match between two grandmasters of chess, they sit there and they think. And they're thinking, and they're in the zone of thinking. And then sometimes I watch a game of basketball or football, and the head coach is completely out of control, right? Well, you know, chess and football, chess and basketball might be different in terms of the physicality, but the thinking is the same. You got to think 2 moves ahead, 3 moves ahead, 5 moves ahead. And you can't do that when you have no poise in what you're doing. And then when you're complaining to the referees all the time about calls, don't get mad at your players when they complain. Because they're just going to follow what you do. So if you've absolved, like Belichick will absolve, like there's no call that a referee's going to make that Belichick's going to walk in the team meeting after a loss and say, we got screwed, fellas. No. He's going to walk in and say, here's what we didn't do as a football team, and here's why. The game never comes down to one play. You know, for the media, it does, but it never does.
Absolutely. I don't think there's any question about that. I think as a coach, if you're at all self-reflective, you go back and you can point to 50, 60 plays that boy, if this would have gone differently, it could have had an impact on the outcome. And certainly one play never makes the difference.
Coaches, check out the Chris Holtmann Ohio State Playbook by Brian Applin from Tyler Whitcomb Coaching Courses. Coach Holtmann has enjoyed tremendous success in his first three seasons at Ohio State, following the blueprint that he established during his tenures at both Gardner-Webb and Butler. Visit coachtube.com/users/Tyler Whitcomb to check out this great resource.
Mike, I want to give you a chance to talk a little bit about how you got started with the Daily Coach, because as I told you before we jumped on, I think it's a just tremendous resource for every single coach at every level. Doesn't matter the sport. So just explain how you got connected to Coach George Raveling, who I know a lot of our listeners will be aware of his name. Talk about how you got involved with him and just what the idea was behind the Daily Coach and how you guys go about putting out such great content every day.
So, you know, it was kind of serendipitous how we kind of connected. I was working at CBS Sports before I went to work for the Raiders, and there was a man there by the name of John Colmansberger, who is a fascinating human being. He's a savant, basically, and he was a research guy and would clip papers, and he said he and I would have conversations, and he said to me, you know, you and Coach Rav would be really good friends. You two need to hook up. And he would send Coach Rav newspaper clippings. Coach Rav is an avid reader. And so, you know, I met Coach Rav periodically, and then we've had a lot of mutual friends. And then when I went to Los Angeles and I wrote the book in Los Angeles, he lives in Los Angeles. And so we started connecting and having lunch and dinner. And those three-hour lunches or dinners, whatever they were, we had a lot of ideas. We shared a lot of thoughts. And the number one thought we both agreed on was we could serve people with our knowledge and what we've gone through in our careers by helping coaches become better coaches. And so because of that, the idea of the Daily Coach, and we both are friends with Ryan Holiday. Coach is friends with Ryan Holiday. And so we knew Ryan does the Daily Stoic. And, you know, we wanted to tailor it not towards, you know, the great Roman leaders. We wanted to tailor it towards, you know, the Daily Coach. Somebody could read something. And then the book about Bill Campbell, The Trillion Dollar Coach, came out. And we're like, you know, there's a huge void here for coaches. And so the two of us got together, along with Alec and Kamadi, that formed the partnership that we were able to come together. And it's really not me and it's not Coach Rad. It's the four of us together trying to come up with really good ideas to try to enhance your day.
So what's that process look like? Like, how do you go about coming up with your topics, your ideas? One day you're putting something, are you collectively bringing it together? Just tell me about your process, because I'm fascinated by that.
Well, I mean, first of all, you know, no one reads more than Coach Raveling, and he might send me 70 emails, 50 texts in a day about an idea. And Kamadi does the same. And then we just basically kind of sort through the ideas and say, I think we should write about this, and I think we should write about this, and kind of like lay it out. And all of us have a voice in how to, like today's column about Coach O, you know, Alec texted me and said, I think we really need to write about what Coach O's accomplished. And Coach Rav was sending articles about it. And so we kind of all got together and we formulated the column. And so it's really, and then we just hired two young interns to help us through the editorial process. And so we basically, someone will write something, they'll put it in the query. Then everybody kind of looks it over, makes adjustments. Nobody's ego is so that I want my words said, you know, it's like that's gone. We don't have that. We don't need that. We don't want that. This is a group effort. And then from there, we release it out at 7 o'clock every morning. So it's truly a collaborative think tank. And the best thing is what Coach Rav and I talk about all the time. I mean, we're learning. He and I are learning from this. And I think we've just skimmed the surface. I think there's a huge vacuum of coaches that aren't getting coached.
I agree with you. We
want to grow this, and then we're going to start a consultant business to help coaches become great.
I think you're 100% spot on in that there's a huge void in coach education, and especially at the lower levels. I think when you get into high school coaching and you get into college coaching, I think it's become far more common these days for people to seek out more information. But I think at the lower levels, I think it's still a challenge, especially where you have a lot of volunteer coaches and that type of thing. And again, I think the things that you guys put out every single day are applicable to a coach who is a Division I college coach. And I think they're applicable to someone who is coaching their second grader for the very first time in a basketball game. It's all applicable. And then the other thing too is, and I'm sure this is a part of what you guys are thinking about, you can take what you've said and apply it to coaching, but you can also in many cases apply it to your life or your career if you're not a coach. And yeah. So to me, it's just tremendously valuable stuff. And I know I look forward to getting it every single day. And that's one of the reasons why when I initially sought you out to have you come on, I just thought, wow, this is a resource that we need to get in front of more coaches. And so I wanted to be able to have you on to talk about it and really share what you're doing with it, because I think it's tremendously valuable. So before we get out, I want to be respectful of your time, Michael. Give us a way that people can find out, how can they subscribe to The Daily Coach? Where can they find your book? Give us an idea of all the things you're doing. Reach out how people can follow you and find out more about what you're doing. And then I'll jump back on and wrap things up.
You know, it's easy to find me. I'm on Twitter, M. Lombardi NFL on Twitter. I do use Instagram, you know, LinkedIn as well. The Daily Coach is another place to find us. Coach Rav is there. We're all a part of Twitter. We all kind of use each other's Twitters and we go back and forth with it. So there's certainly access to us there. The book Gridiron Genius is available in paperback. It's on Amazon. You can order it. That's available. And, you know, I write usually twice a week for The Athletic. Now as the season's kind of winding down, I'll write once a week. And I try to write about leadership. I try to write about coaching within that framework there too. So, you know, it's pretty easy to get to us. And, you know, we enjoy talking to people. I think it's really important that when I wrote Gridiron Genius, the book is not about me. The book's about the great coaches I've worked for. But I really wanted the women's field hockey coach from a Division II school to impact her coaching. That's who the book was for. The book wasn't for, you know, I actually get more basketball people to talk to me or hockey people than actually the NFL people. Because most people in the NFL, yeah, we do that. We already know that, right? They have that, you know, we do that.
Right.
So where I gain the most satisfaction and pride comes from some coach, high school coach in Arkansas, who's coaching women's tennis that feels like the book's helping them. And I think that's awesome.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there's, as I've said throughout the podcast today, I think that there's value for every level of coaching in everything that you do. I think the book and The Daily Coach, if you are a coach and you are not subscribed to that, you're missing out. And I would highly recommend that you do that. Michael, I can't thank you enough for spending some time with us this morning. It's been a pleasure having you on, getting a chance to talk to you about all the great things that you're doing. I wish you and your Philadelphia 76ers luck as we go forward here with the rest of the NBA season. And to everyone out there, we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Registration is now open at headstartbasketball.com for this summer's Head Start Basketball Camps. We'll be hosting camps for boys and girls in grades 1 through 6 throughout the greater Cleveland area. Get registered today and make sure you hit the courts with us this summer.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.